you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
All right, we're back. Andy Dean here. And we're going to take a turn to legal stories because of the breaking Jodi Arias verdict that came in this afternoon. And then also the Cleveland sex dungeon case. And then in 10 or 15 minutes, I will get back to Benghazi. It's just this Jodi Arias stuff. Look, I'm not like super into this, but we got to cover it because the verdict came in today. And they don't want to have to cover it anymore. So Jodi Arias, we all know, charged with murder one. The verdict came in. This is regarding the killing of Travis Alexander that took place on June 4th, 2008. She slit his throat, shot him, and stabbed him 27 times. It sounds like love. And then January 2nd of 2013, the trial began. It was 67 days. She testified for 18 of those days. And then on May 3rd, it went to the jury, and today we got a verdict. This is what the jury verdict was today.
The State of Arizona versus Jodi Ann Arias, verdict, count one. We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action upon our oaths, do find the defendant as to count one, first degree murder, guilty. Is this your true verdict, so say you want it all?
Okay, so to help us analyze Jodi Arias' verdict today and the Cleveland sex dungeon, there's nobody else who knows dungeons better than the one and only Justin Leto, Miami-based attorney. What's up, Justin?
Good afternoon, my friend. How you doing? Thanks for the intro.
Good, good, good. So normally, Justin, you're a liberal and we fight over liberal things, but this is going to be more according to the letter of the law, and you're an expert in all things legal. So talk to me about Jodi Arias. I was never super into this trial. Everybody was like, oh, she's super hot and the sex angle and all that. HLN, the cable network, dedicated their whole network to it, so I'm sure their ratings are going to plummet, which will make Nancy Grace sad. So I got to ask you, I never understood as my voice cracks. Why did Jodi Arias, why was there such interest here? Because she never had a chance here in the sense that she was obviously guilty. She said that two ninjas had killed her husband, two intruders that were ninjas in Arizona. And then a couple years later, she retracted that and said, oh, no, it was self-defense. He was mean to me. So then I, in an act of self-defense, slit his throat, shot him, stabbed him 27 times. I mean, this was almost as cut and dry as the OJ case. Now, granted, there are stupid juries out there that let off Casey Anthony and OJ. So was the defense betting on finding a stupid member of a jury, which they couldn't find?
No, I think that, you know, this case, I personally wasn't very into it either. I thought it was kind of boring. But the purpose of the interest in this is really, from a legal perspective, the fact that Jodi Arias took the stand and sat on the stand for 18 days.
That wasn't it. People were interested because she was a sex freak. You know it.
Well, yeah, no. I think that certainly was the initial interest, and it was very shocking at first. But how many days in a row can you hear about it before it just becomes boring to listen?
It's called the Playboy Channel. I'll get you a subscription. Apparently, it does very well.
All right, well, not with Jodi Arias on a death penalty trial. But the bottom line is that you never see a defendant take the stand for 18 days, and I think that's what was so compelling from a legal perspective.
By the way, is that a legal record, 18 days on the stand?
I don't know the answer to that, but it's very rare to ever see a defendant take the stand for even 1 minute. Let alone stay on the stand for 18 days. So it's really a prosecutor's dream to have a chance to cross-examine a criminal defendant in a first-degree murder death penalty case. So for this prosecutor, it was like a lifelong fantasy, I'm sure. But as far as the conviction is concerned, I wasn't totally shocked by it, but the way that the facts were, at least from what I had heard them, I was expecting the second-degree murder, only because to prove premeditation in that case is kind of difficult because she spent like 12 hours or something at his house having sex with him all night before she finally killed him. So if it was premeditated, it probably would have...
12 hours? That sounds exhausting. I mean, who are these people?
I know. They're both weird people.
I mean, I guess our ED sponsors would be proud of that. I think it's called propiopism or something, but 12 hours. Jeez. Okay, wait. So what was the defense thinking, though, about putting her on the stand for 18 days? Is it, hey, she spends 18 days on the stand, she develops a bond with one of the male jurors who want to, you know, take her out to drinks one night? I mean, what's the thinking there?
I think it's even more than that, because tomorrow they're going to start the death penalty phase of the trial. And if the defense always thought that there was a strong chance that she was going to get convicted of first degree murder, what better way to humanize somebody and to make a jury feel like they actually know them than to put them on the stand in their face, talking to them for 3 weeks? That way, when it comes time for the jury to decide whether or not they're going to allow this person to be sentenced to death, because in Arizona, the jury gets to make a recommendation to the judge. It's much more likely that if you humanize somebody and let a jury get to know them, that a jury's going to have a much more...
Right. Okay, I get that. That makes sense, because even though she's a murderer, there may be some sympathy in one member of the jury because she's had a messed up life or whatever that may be. And is it true it takes all 12 members of the jury to say yes to the death penalty? Can you talk us through the penalty phase, which is upcoming? They have a choice between life without parole or death penalty. Tell us the process.
Well, again, I'm not going to profess to be an expert in the way that Arizona does it. Every state does it differently. But what I think, and maybe a caller can come in and correct me, but the judge makes the ultimate decision in Arizona. The jury just makes a recommendation. So the recommendation is going to come in as a vote, a panel vote. But even if the jury votes 12 to nothing, from what I understand, the judge can make a decision to do the opposite of what the jury recommends. If the judge finds there's either a mitigating circumstance that would say there should be no death, or some other reason why the judge finds that the death penalty would not be appropriate, the jury simply makes a recommendation, and the judge goes by that recommendation and then puts down the sentence.
Okay, and if you're a betting person, what does your gut tell you, that she's not going to get the death penalty because she was on the stand for so long, and you're going to find one member of the jury as a holdout?
No, I think she's going to get the death penalty, and I think that in about 10 or 12 years from now, she will probably be one of the big stories, because she's going to be a woman getting executed in the state of Arizona. I do.
That does happen. There have female, the women have been executed. That has happened before.
It has, but it's so rare. Usually these types of crimes are these types of sentences are reserved for men for whatever reason.
But well, because men are more violent. Men are disgusting. Men are awful. That's why.
That might be the case.
Yeah.
But I think that for Jodi Arias, because this was such a compelling story today, you know, when the appeal process is over and it is finally time to put her to death, I think you're going to see the same type of hoopla surrounding her actual death sentence being carried out. But I'm not a believer in the death penalty under really any circumstances.
Yeah, it's because you're a hippie liberal and you're sad.
That's right. That's right. I'm making a peace sign right now.
Can I ask you a question, though? In your Volkswagen bus, which I'm sure you're in right now on your way to a concert, I don't know, who do you guys go see now that the Grateful Dead is gone? I don't know. You go see Fish or something? But what is it about? I mean, don't you understand that somebody who takes a life, that for justice to be done, it's not about, and you'll say, well, Andy, it's expensive for the death penalty. That's not what it's about, the victims' families and for the victims themselves that can't speak. I mean, if somebody murders me, I want them dead. Somebody murders a family member of mine, the system needs to take care of that person. Otherwise, it'll lead to vigilante justice. What do you not see?
Well, there's two things. First of all, I agree with you. If somebody killed a member of my family, of course I would want them dead. Absolutely. My problem is that I think that the way that the death penalty is instituted in this country is problematic.
So then, you know, Justin, you prove my point. Your problem is with the way the death penalty is administered. So let's fix it. Let's make sure that these appeals can't go on for more than 10 years. Let's fix that. But don't say to me, Andy, I'm against the death penalty, because you sound foolish.
Andy, this is not a cost issue for me. The cost issue is a fallacy argument for people who are proponents of the death penalty. My problem with the death penalty is I think it's racially biased. I think that way too many people are convicted and put to death based on the color of their skin as opposed to their crimes in some states. I think that's totally unfair. And I also think that it's a state-by-state thing, whereas if you commit a horrific crime in one state, you can go to prison and maybe be paroled, like Charles Manson has been up for parole so many times. But in other states, you're going to be put to death. I think you have to have some uniformity, and you have to have some control mechanism where you're not going to have people who are convicted wrongfully of murder who are put to death, or convictions for murder and death sentences based on racial motivations. I think that's the problem with the death penalty in the United States.
I don't know. My earphones were broke for the last minute. I'm not sure what you said. Hey, one last thing on Jodi Arias, and then we're going to talk Cleveland sex dungeon. Okay. What does the media move on to as far as the next case? Headline News, HLN, Nancy Grace, Jane Velez Mitchell, all they've been doing for the past 5 months is Jodi Arias. Is there another trial in line that we're going to be hearing about soon that they're into, like involving sex and violence? Do we know what's up next for HLN?
I don't know, man. Those people bore me so much. I can't even listen to them. They're such hypocrites because they make all of their money off of these cases, yet they sit there and they criticize the people that they're making all their dollars off. I would probably predict while they're in dead time right now, they'll probably talk about the Michael Jackson civil trial, which is another yawn, boring thing to talk about. But that's really all you got right now. There's no other compelling murder case out there to talk about.
Yeah, I guess. Or they'll move on to the Cleveland stuff. So that's what we're going to do, Justin. Justin Leto joining us, Miami-based trial attorney, the website LetoLaw.com. Mr. Leto, let's talk about this dungeon. I'm sure 48 hours ago when you found out about this, just like I mean, this was just one of the most disgusting and awkward things I've ever heard of. For 10 years, three girls kept in sexual captivity, raped by this animal, Ariel Castro, who's headed to hell. So there are a couple legal twists in this story I want to discuss. First, Ariel Castro, the main perpetrator, who used to be a school bus driver, his two brothers, the Castro brothers, were thought to be involved in this, but they haven't been charged, just the ringleader. Why is it that the other two brothers haven't been charged yet?
Well, because the police are building their case. Once you charge these people with a crime, you know, they get all of their Miranda rights. They get to shut up. They don't have, they're put into custody. They get their lawyers and they start to build their defense. It makes sense for the police to build their case before they charge the guys. What they do is they get the main guy right now. You know, they're probably going to speak to him, see if he's got anything to do to dump on his brothers. Eventually, you're going to see these guys get charged, at least as accomplices. And what these people did is so disgusting. Talk about, listen, like I said, I'm not a proponent of the death penalty, but when it comes to child rape and this type of stuff, there are certain people who have a special place reserved in hell.
Yeah, I agree. Child rapists should be sentenced to death, although even in the worst cases, they're not, because only murder offenses get to the death penalty. Is that right?
Well, technically speaking, rape is considered a capital crime, which means that in the old days, rape was something that the United States considered to be punishable by death. It's been abandoned for some reason, and now it's reserved only for murder. But I can think of a lot of murders that are not as bad as some of these child rapes. And I'm not saying that one is worse than the other, but there's nothing more disgusting and despicable than capturing young kids, raping them for 10 years, having them get pregnant, and then forcing abortions upon them.
Yeah, and okay, Justin, that's the one legal angle that I want to understand, is that these three young girls who were raped and forced to have these kids in captivity, there is a six-year-old daughter who survived. But their reports, and once again, all this stuff is developing, so that five babies were either born and murdered, or they think that now the prevailing theory is that these girls in captivity were forced to have miscarriages. Ariel Castro would starve them until they had a miscarriage, or according to some reports, unconfirmed, he would literally beat them, kick them in the stomach until they had a forcible miscarriage. I wanted to ask you, to forcibly make somebody have a miscarriage, is that a murder beef? Can you get somebody for murder for that?
It's a difficult question because I think, again, it would be a state-by-state thing. Most states, they don't recognize, at least from a civil perspective, if there's, you know, like a medical malpractice case or something like that, they don't recognize a fetus as being something that can be considered a life for the purpose of civil liability. But for criminal liability, I would have to think that after the baby gets to a certain point in gestation, that there could be a viable reason to charge them with murder. You know, if you're starving somebody and the baby is, you know, 30 weeks along and it's born still because these people are disgusting and they're causing these babies to be malnutrition, it would sound like something that could be potentially a murder rap. And if there's a way to get these guys for murder for something, do it, because they got to face every potential charge that's out there for what they've done to these kids.
Yeah.
By the way, one other thing, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
There is some talk today about the way the police handled this, and I think there is some discussion that needs to be had about how the cops wrote these girls off as being runaways and basically dropped the investigation, had multiple opportunities to rescue.
Well, what do you chalk that up to? Because it was a low-income neighborhood and the cops are busy, and so they're not doing their work there, and they're like, oh, well, every time these people are reported missing, well, one of those girls, Amanda Berry, was a missing person, but one of the older ones, Michelle Knight, the family's like, oh, yeah, she's missing. She's been kidnapped. And the police are like, actually, she's a runaway because she was over 18 at the time. Do you think that the Cleveland police were not dotting their I's and crossing their T's because of the low income thing? Or what do you honestly see?
No, I do. And you're absolutely right. And it's not because they're overworked. It's because they just don't care. Let's be honest about it. Let's not
go ahead and put all, like, you know, I'm not going to allow that on my program where you say the police, there may be some incompetent members, just like in any profession. They're incompetent radio hosts. Actually, most radio hosts are incompetent. But they're good police and bad police in every city. But it looks in this particular case that they missed some important data points, that, like, all three of these girls were kidnapped within a three-mile radius. And the kidnappers were friends with one of the girls who ended up being kidnapped. So it looks like the police showed up one time at his house for a school bus infraction. You would think that this wouldn't have gone on for so long, but I don't know.
Well, hold on. You don't generalize what I just said. I wasn't saying that all police are bad. What I'm saying is the police that were involved in this investigation chalked this up to a runaway simply because they didn't think that these low-income girls were worth the time to investigate. And there's something really, really painfully wrong with that. And to have it wasn't one opportunity. There were three different times at the minimum that the police were called to this house for disturbances. One, I think, where somebody actually reported that there was potential domestic violence going on in that house. They knocked on the door, nobody answered, and they just walked away.
Yeah, look, I've heard conflicting reports, Justin, literally all over the place, that the only time that the police actually knocked on the door was when this Ariel Castro had taken a school bus and stopped off at Wendy's, and he left the kid unattended on the school bus. And so the police showed up, knocked on the door, he wasn't home, and then, or he either wasn't answering, and then the police never followed up. So, I mean, that's what I had heard. I mean, as far as the other police reports, they're unconfirmed that the neighbors are saying that they saw people in the backyard and the police never showed up. Those are all unconfirmed reports.
Yeah, but they're going to be confirmed eventually. I mean, I've heard reports about people saying they saw people on girls on dog leashes back there on the ground crawling around. I mean, disgusting stuff. This reminds me of like Silence of the Lambs. You know when they go to that the guy's house in Silence of the Lambs and he's got that dungeon downstairs?
Yeah, it puts the lotion on its skin or it gets the hose again.
Yeah, this is disgusting stuff like that. And I think that if the police had opportunities that were blown, then there has to be something said about the way they're handling their business. There's something needs to be done to change it, because the idea here is you got to protect children. It doesn't matter if they're rich or they're poor. They need to be protected from predators like this.
Oh, that was sweet. You should run for Congress, Justin. By the way, one last thing. The good thing that came out of this, though, Charles Ramsey, the next door neighbor having McDonald's at the time, admit that that guy is just a media superstar.
Greatest. I wrote this to my friends all in email the next morning because I saw it on CNN the night before. Greatest interview I've ever seen on the news, literally ever. I mean, that guy had more one-liners in 3 minutes of the interview than I've ever heard. He's like an internet sensation.
All right, let's play one of these clips just because this guy, we're going to celebrate him. Apparently, McDonald's is stepping in, giving him free food for life. Let's hear him.
I barbecue with this dude. We eat ribs and whatnot and listen to salsa music. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. And you had no indication that there was anything
going on? Bro, not a clue that girl was in that house.
All right, one more from the great Charles Ramsey.
Bro, I knew something was wrong when a little pretty white girl ran into a black man's arms. Something is wrong here. Dead giveaway. Either she homeless or she got problems. That's the only reason why she ran into a black man.
Justin, could you say that he may be one of the finest comedic talents never to be recognized?
He's amazing. And you didn't even play the whole thing because he says dead giveaway like 3 straight times with his eyes wide open. What an amazing interview. That guy is awesome.
Yeah, and his 911 call is a classic. I'm going to be replaying that in perpetuity. I mean, this is just excellent. All right, Justin, we got to jump. But Justin Leto, the website LetoLaw.com. Brother, thanks for the analysis.
My man, talk to you soon.
All right, peace.